Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. First off, I want to let you know that if you have not already checked it out, we are now on iTunes Podcast. So if you don't want to directly go to the website and listen to our podcast, that's fine. Instead, you can actually go to iTunes Podcast, look up Total space EM, that's T-O-T-A-L space EM, and you should be able to find us. As a fair warning, right now, for whatever reason, the artwork is not showing up until you subscribe. So if you don't see something with artwork, hopefully by the time everything gets going, you're listening to this, there may be artwork that you can see. But if there's not, just know that if you see Total EM, that is us. Now, last time we talked about the React 2 trial, and that was a really interesting topic. We got some good feedback with it. This time we're going to talk about something maybe not as fun, but is a very common complaint, and that is back pain. Yes, the lovely back pain. We see it quite often. Now, there's lots of different reasons why we see it. And one thing to keep in mind with this trial is that, yes, it's a very common issue, but it's not always one that we can put right into the study. So as we're going into this study, keep that in mind. So what study are we talking about? Well, the study we are talking about was from JAMA. It was published October 20th, 2015. And that would be volume 314, number 15. And that study is called Naproxen with Cyclobenzaprine, Oxycodone with Acetaminophen, or Placebo for Treating Acute Low Back Pain, a Randomized Clinical Trial. Now, as you may know from other topics that we've discussed, like the REACT2 trial, I like to try and put in a case in there. So let's pick a 26-year-old otherwise healthy male who comes into your ED complaining of back pain after moving furniture at his home. Seems like a very common issue we have. He reports pain that is worse with lifting, bending, and twisting, that is mostly a dull ache but sharp at times. At home, he has tried ice and heat without relief. His review of systems is negative for red flag symptoms. On exam, he has tenderness to palpation of the lower back without vertebral point tenderness, and occasional muscle spasms are palpated. So what's our background? Well, low back pain is a common complaint that is responsible for more than 2.5 million visits annually. It is treated in a variety of ways, ranging from NSAIDs to muscle relaxers and even opiates. So what's the clinical question? Well, in patients with acute, non-traumatic, non-radicular low back pain presenting to the ED, does adding cyclobenzaprine or oxycodone with acetaminophen, also known as Percocet if you're in the U.S., to naproxen improve functional outcomes or pain at 1 week follow-up? So, what's our population that we were studying? Well, it's back pain patients presenting to an urban ED in the Bronx, New York City, for non-traumatic, non-radicular back pain present for 2 weeks or less that has a Roland Morris Disability Questionnaire, an RMDQ, score greater than 5. We have a copy of the actual scale on the website for you to look at. It's in the form of a questionnaire. In this version of the score, there are 24 questions. These questions, like I said, you can go to the website and look, but they include things about basically assessing your level of disability. You know, are you working? Are you having to use assistance with ambulation? Are you having increased pain that causes you to have to be more irritable? All these other different types of things. And although they looked for a score of 5 or more, these patients usually had quite a high score. We'll talk about that more in a second. So the exclusion criteria. It's quite simple, really. Patients with radicular back pain that was defined as radiating below the gluteal folds, direct trauma to the back within the previous month, pain for more than 2 weeks, or recent history of greater than one episode of lower back pain per month. Now, the intervention was naproxen paired with either oxycodone with acetaminophen or cyclobenzaprine. Cyclobenzaprine, by the way, is Flexeril. And if you're working off of brand names. Now, the comparison was naproxen with placebo. The primary outcome was improvement in RMDQ between ED discharge and 1 week later. So what were the author's conclusions? Well, among patients with acute, non-traumatic, non-radicular, low back pain presenting to the ED, adding cyclobenzaprine or oxycodone with acetaminophen Tuniprox alone did not improve functional outcomes or pain at 1 week follow-up. These findings do not support the use of additional medications in this setting. So let's go over our quality checklist for randomized clinical trials as defined by BEAM. BEAM is the best evidence in emergency medicine. All right, number one, the study population included or focused on those in the ED? Yes. The patients were adequately randomized? Yes. The randomization process was concealed? Yes, this was a double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. Pretty darn good. The patients were analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized? Yes, even when lost to follow-up at 7 days or 3 months. 5. The study patients were recruited consecutively. No selection bias. Not completely, as research associates staffed ED 16 to 24 hours per day, 7 days per week during the 30-month study starting in April 2012. That means that up to 8 hours a day, there may not have been someone doing the research, so not every single person who could have been recruited was recruited. The patients in both groups were similar with respect to prognostic factors. Yes. 7. All participants, patients, clinicians, outcome assessors, were unaware of group allocation. Yes, with the exception of the pharmacists who did the randomization and made the medications, which were done in a concealed manner. 8. All groups were treated equally except for the intervention. Unsure with some of the secondary data, but as best as we can tell, probably so. 9. Follow-up was complete, i.e. at least 80% of for both groups. Yes. And that's both for 7 days and 3 months. 10. All patient important outcomes were considered. I believe so. I would consider that a yes. 11. The treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant. Yes. So the key results. The RMDQ at baseline in the placebo group was 20. Remember, they need at least 5 to be in there. So the interquartile range, IQR, of 17 to 21. In the cyclobenzaprine group, it was 19 with an IQR of 17 to 21. And in the oxycodone acetaminophen group, it was 20 with an IQR of 17 to 22. At 1 week follow-up, the RMDQ improvement was 9.8 in the placebo group, 10.1 in the cyclobenzaprine group, and 11.1 in the oxycodone with acetaminophen group. Between group difference in the mean RMDQ improvement for cyclobenzaprine versus placebo is 0.3. That's a 98.3% confidence interval with a negative 2.6 to 3.2 with a p-value of 0.77. For oxycodone with acetaminophen versus placebo is 1.3. Again, a 98.3% confidence interval with a negative 2.1 to 3.9 with a p of 0.45. And the oxycodone with acetaminophen versus cyclobenzaprine was 0.9 with a 98.3% confidence interval ranging from negative 2.1 to 3.9 with a p of 0.45. And remember, all the confidence intervals cross zero. Now, let's go over some other details of the study here real quick. So, as one might expect, as we see with our patients clinically, is that the pain did persist for a lot of people. More than 50% of patients still required medication for their pain, which they said continued at the 1 week follow-up. However, at least two-thirds of the patients in each category would want the same medication again if they returned for the same pain. Proxen was still continued regularly, but other medications were used much less frequently. So in other words, patients were still using naproxen on kind of a regular basis, but they weren't necessarily using the studied medication as frequently at the 1 week follow-up. Now, another point was that patients could have been unblinded during the trial. The placebo versus cyclobenzaprine or oxycodone with acetaminophen could cause certain side effects which would unblind the patient. With opiates, we know that there's certain kind of euphoric type feelings at times or certain other side effects that the medications give, that a lot of people have probably taken hydrocodone or oxycodone with acetaminophen at some point in their life and may even remember those types of effect and then be able to guess that maybe they were on it then. Same thing with cyclobenzaprine. Can make you very drowsy, Also has some other effects to it as well. And some people, maybe even a little bit of a euphoric effect. And people, you know, a lot of people have been on cyclobenzaprine supreme before, especially if they've had any history of back pain. It seems like a very common medication that gets used. So to have better looked at this, the researchers could have asked patients about what medication they thought they received. So in other words, they could see if the patients thought they were even unblinded. This could have potentially led to changes in reporting and functional outcomes if the patients had kind of guessed what they were. And if you had assessed that question, you'd be able to better say, well, a lot of patients thought they did better with the oxycodone with acetaminophen because they could tell that they're on the oxycodone with acetaminophen, or vice versa even. But it's something that would have been nice to have had in the study to have better appreciated what was going on. Another point is that not all patients are created equally. The study was done in an urban ED that served socioeconomically depressed people, i.e. the poor. Now, with access to treatment can affect back pain outcomes, and not all patients have equal access, especially those who are in a large urban setting that are do not have the means to pay for further follow-up or further treatment, especially alternative medicine-type treatments like going to the chiropractor, which was specifically mentioned in the study. However, there are more likely hospitals such as the one that was studied that does serve this population. So probably quite a few people, including myself with the population that I see, even though it's not necessarily really urban for the most part where I work at, we do have a very socioeconomically depressed people as the way the study describes it. So I still think a lot of people can benefit, especially in the U.S. where not everyone's guaranteed healthcare coverage and insurance. That's a whole different topic for another day. All right, so another point is that there were a large number of secondary analyses which could have led to false findings. Anytime you start plugging in all these secondary findings that you're looking for, just it's almost like a shotgun approach. So I get a little hesitant when they say we had all these secondary analyses and then we found this one that worked. You may see that in some other big studies. Anytime you see that, get a little questioning, you know, again, get skeptic. So one such example that I like to point out would be that there was no difference in outcomes from those who had the placebo versus oxycodone with acetaminophen, but in the secondary analysis, there was found to be fewer patients reporting moderate or severe pain if they took oxycodone with acetaminophen more than once. This should serve as a reminder that too many analyses does lead to that false finding. And the authors even said, we really don't think this is totally right. This is one of the few things we found. Maybe it's not correct. So again, worth keeping in the back of your mind. You may see that, but that shouldn't necessarily be practice changing by itself. You need a better study to actually look into that detail to see if that's correct. Now, keep in mind how the medications were given. If you actually go to the primary source and look at it, which I'd encourage you to do, especially with, you know, any study we talk about, but this is a really good example of one, you may first look at it and think, wait, these are not the medications I usually use, or these are not the doses. Well, if you look a little more closely, it actually makes sense, and maybe more along what you practice. Patients who received the naproxen, which was everyone, they received 20 tablets of 500 milligrams of naproxen, which they took twice daily, no matter their group. They then received 60 tablets of one of the following, the placebo, cyclobenzaprine 5 milligrams, or oxycodone with acetaminophen 5-325. So that's 5 milligrams of oxycodone, 325 milligrams of acetaminophen. Patients were told to take 1 to 2 of these pills every 8 hours as needed for their pain. More specifically, their directions in the study was that they were told to take one pill, then wait 30 minutes before taking the second pill. So, for example, you get the cyclobenzaprine, 5 milligrams, you take one pill, you wait 30 minutes. If you're still having symptoms, you'd then take the second pill. In addition, they were instructed to try certain exercises and stretches, hot or cold packs, physical therapy, massage therapy, and acupuncture. In general, the dosing of medications is similar to what can be done in many practice settings, which may help with generalization. So what do we think about this study? Well, we agree with the conclusion that patients with acute, non-traumatic, non-radicular low back pain presenting to the ED do not benefit from adding cyclobenzaprine or oxycodone with acetaminophen to naproxen to improve functional outcomes or pain at 1 week. Routine use of adding these medications do not appear to be useful on this study. However, this is a narrow population and cannot be generalized to all back pain patients. Now, if you notice at times I mentioned the 30-day follow-up, we're not going to go over that here because it's more secondary analysis, and I feel like it'd be a bit of a hypocrite if I talked about how those findings were when I just said that there were so many secondary analyses, maybe it's not totally right. I do encourage you to go ahead, look at that study though, really see and kind of make a judgment to yourself, because I think those secondary analyses weren't too bad. But again, if we're going to discredit one, we probably need to be careful about discrediting others for that reason, or giving them credit unnecessarily. So what's our bottom line? We agree that the addition of cyclobenzaprine or oxycodone with acetaminophen does not show benefit in addition to naproxen for acute, non-traumatic, non-radicular, low back pain of less than 2 weeks duration. So let's talk about our case resolution, our 26-year-old. So you discuss with your patient the plan for treatment. You review how current evidence shows that naproxen alone appears beneficial and medications such as cyclobenzaprine or oxycodone with acetaminophen do not show additional benefit. You also explain how adding these medications do have increased risks such as drowsiness, nausea, vomiting, and dizziness, all things that were actually in the study if you go back to the actual paper. After the shared decision-making, the patient agrees to try naproxen along with conservative measures to help with his pain. So let's talk about the clinical application. At this time, patients who are appropriate and meet study criteria should be considered for treatment by naproxen alone. Share decision-making and detailed information about back pain along with the risks and benefits of other potential medications should be discussed. So what do I tell my patient? So what I'd like to usually say is that although there are many ways to treat back pain, and you may have been treated for this similarly in the past, our current evidence shows that naproxen alone is beneficial in treating your pain. Other medications have been tested with naproxen and do not show benefit. Back pain can take a long time to recover from, and there are many ways to help speed up your recovery. Make sure to follow up with your PCP so that they can further evaluate your pain with time to see if other things need to be done. So in the end, I'd like to remind you that yes, back pain, it's very complex. Sometimes we discredit back pain right off the bat, but there are serious patients with back pain that we need to consider. Again, the red flag symptoms that we're talking about at the beginning. These are all things that help us kind of differentiate patients. And for me, we're talking about a very small patient population overall in this study. To better understand this, I'd like to point out that in the study, 2,588 patients with low back pain were assessed for eligibility. 2,198 of them were excluded for a variety of different reasons, whether it was age, the length of duration, there was direct trauma, sometimes contraindications of medications, or radicular pain. A lot of other things led to these patients being taken out, and only 67 had refused participation. So that means that out of 2,588 patients, only 323 were randomized. So to me, that tells me that, yes, lots of back pain, lots of different causes. But in the end, very few people really met this study. And so it should be very closely considered when we decide to treat patients with naproxen alone that maybe we need to think specifically about the instance. Now, for me, I use naproxen a lot. I find it very beneficial with my patients, and sometimes they get a little surprised that we're going to use something that they can also get over the counter. But when we really talk about the details of how back pain works, it does take time, but most of it gets better on its own. Usually, they're a lot more understanding or willing to at least try it out. So that's it for this study. Hopefully, very soon, you'll be hearing back from us. We are going to be interviewing Min LeKong on Twitter. I mean, if you haven't heard of him and you're on Twitter, I'd be quite surprised. But it's Ketamin, in other words, being ketamine, but instead of the E, he has the H on there. If you haven't followed him yet, follow him. He's very interesting to read his posts about, his little tweets and his comments and everything else. Very interesting guy. Hopefully, we'll have him on here very soon where we can get him on the show and talk a little more. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for our next episode, I'd like to thank you all for listening. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to kind of, get on iTunes podcasts if you can. Give us good ratings all around. Let us know what we can do to get better, though, too. And in the meantime, remember to provide total care everywhere.